Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience, coming at you from the great forest deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. On this episode, we're continuing our discussion of our ongoing rune walk. This is a year-long ritual in which we will be spending 2 weeks with each rune of the Elder Futhark. That's 24 runes and the 13 Valkyries listed within the Grimness Maw, calling on each of these Valkyries one a month to help us to learn these runes, to elucidate them to us, to serve the mead of poetry that is these runes. I am again joined by Lindsay Stark, David Payne, and Louis Galindo. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Real good.
Good.
Glad to hear it. All right. So this episode, we're going to be talking again, of course, about the next two runes, Thurisaz and Ansuz, and we'll be talking about Valkyrie Mist. So, real quick before we jump into that, do we want to give another quick rundown of what we're doing, what this is, what the runes are? Just for anyone that might be listening for the first time. And of course, look, if you're jumping into this and you're interested, we have already done a couple episodes. Look back on the previous episodes. They're entitled Walking the Runes, A Year with the Elder Futhark, and the last episode is called Rune Walk Part 1, Hrist, Fehu, Urus. That would be the first two runes. So check those out. If you want to join us in this walk, you can join our Patreon, Nightbird Patreon. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's only $3 a month, and it gives you access to our Discord, and it'll give you access to all the rituals, the invocations that we use for this rune walk. And you also get bonus posts. You'll get my automatic writing that I do for each Valkyrie, all kinds of cool stuff. But if you want to join us, you can join us at any time. Just jump on there, and you can start whenever. This is not time locked in any way. You can join a year from now. You can join 3 months from now, right now, and just go ahead and start. So with that being said, Lindsay, do you want us to give us a quick reminder on the runes themselves, how each one is a letter, a sound, a symbol, and give your spiel on that?
that's my spiel. I think we took for granted that a lot of folks listening to this might already be familiar with the Elder Futhark, but it is a the runes are sort of multiple things at once. They are it is an alphabet composed of 24 sort of letters, each of those representing a linguistic sound, and each of them being sort of a symbol that is representative of something concrete in the world, but then also in addition to meaning one thing, there's sort of a collection of meaning that aggregates around each rune. So although Thurisaz might mean giant, it also has kind of the accrued meanings of thorn and troll and curse and maybe a dick, is it a knife? Lots of different things. And then in addition to being these loci of meaning, they're also tools and can be used in all different kinds of workings, whether singularly in spell work or combined with other runes into a bind rune. So it's really, the runes are all of these things at once, and so like great places to accrue a lot of good juicy stuff, which is why we're doing this walk.
Sweet. Dave, do you want to do a little rundown of the RuneWalk itself, the structure of it?
Yeah, so we came up with the idea to do the RuneWalk to be something kind of in the same vein as like a Lunar Mansion walk or a Deccan walk. So we just decided to pick a start date. It doesn't really matter what date you start on. You can follow along with us, or you could start right at the beginning again, right now if you wanted to. But we got the 24 runes of the Elder Futhark spread across 12 months. So that just means every 2 weeks you're gonna be working with a different rune, and that's pretty much the quick and easy way to get started.
Yeah, and it's really like it's light, it fits lightly. You know what I mean? Like it's not, it's like it's nice and breezy and allows for whatever practice you have with the runes to work. Like I think we all kind of do different stuff, and like so like I will spend time reading different books about each rune. I think we're all doing that and just kind of meditating them as we go. I know some of us are like doing the invocation every day and like calling the rune every day. You know, I'll wear the rune in my medicine bag. There's as many ways to do it as there are to work with the runes, which is pretty much the limit is your imagination. Sweet.
Yeah, we're not tying each rune to like anything like astrological timing or any certain like ritual dates or anything. So it's a nice loose structure where if you get a little bit of a week behind, it's not that, big of a deal. If you decide that you want to spend a little bit more time with a rune, like there's enough flexibility to do that.
Yeah. 'Cause like a lot of these types of things, you know, you're going on this astrological timing where it's like, shit, I have to do this at 3 o'clock in the morning to get the exact proper angel time. And if I miss it, I blew the thing. It's not like that. Cool. So let's go into Thursos real quick. I know. Woo boy. So let's first talk about. I know Lindsay gave us a little intro to what Thurisos is. Let's each go into our experience of Thurisos, maybe both in the past and, you know, for some of us the first time. Louis, I know like that's cool because we get your perspective as like the person that jumped into it. Not having any prior, like you didn't have a Thurisaz
No.
conception. So you want to start? What was your experience with this one?
Sure, man. Just going over my notes here, what I wrote was Thurisaz for me was all about boundaries, and it was really difficult for me to the prickly nature of my own weak boundaries. It really forced me to look at how much I was working versus what I was accomplishing. The cost data analysis of energy expended in my life into things that I really didn't care about. And there was sort of I began to see the structure of my life and how much of my own personal energy I was sort of bleeding, just hemorrhaging energy because I didn't have strong boundaries. And Thurisaz, for whatever reason, it became really clear while I was working with this rune. I wrote in my notes that I felt like I was constantly being pushed or confronted. It was very confrontational. It was almost to the point of like antagonistic, especially at work. At my job, I stepped down as the department chair of the English department. Like I was just thrust into the middle of a lot of stuff that I didn't want to be a part of, a lot of extra work for no, literally no more money. And I'd been doing it for 2 years because I felt a duty, a sense of duty to it, because I was sort of the elder teacher there. And I finally said, no, I'm not doing this, man. And but it was almost painful, like to say no, because my boundaries have been so It's been an issue of mine growing up and living, and growing up, I'm 52 years old. As a young man of 52, I still have boundary issues, and I needed to. What I was able to do after this all this confrontation was to set boundaries, to say no, to be able to preserve, conserve, reserve all of my own energy. All of the things I didn't want to do anymore, I stopped doing and started doing things that I did want to do. So it was, I even did a workshop during Thursaz. It was all about shadow work. So it was all about confronting the shadow and bringing it to the fore. And so it was perfect timing for all of that to occur, but it was not fun. It was bloody and it stung and it was painful. But on the other side of it now, I wouldn't have traded that time for anything, because it has been one of the more pronounced times of growth in my life that I can think of, mixing that with shamanic work and therapy and my own practice. That small section of time, really, it was became very clear that these things coincided, and it was far too weird to be coincidence.
And we all had it kind of going on, dude. So it's interesting. I immediately what I thought when you mentioned the boundary thing is, so like, are you aware that in the Norse myths, like, not only does Asgard have walls to keep out giants, but like Midgard itself is girdled by like a boundary that Thor like protects the realm from giants. Like, it is like, and I never thought about that until you said it, but like, there's very much the idea of boundaries. And even Thursas, the rune itself, to me, like, what it depicts, it looks like something being pierced. It looks like, and you know, one of the names it got later on was Thorn. Now, arguably, some people that, you know, that's like kind of a Christianization where they took some of the thirst meaning out of it, because thirst literally means like giant or troll. It's where we get the word thirst from, is thirst. And a thirst, there's a couple names for giants. There's Jotun, which became the English word Etten, like Ettenmoors. And that's where we get eat, hunger. So hunger and thirst are these forces. And that's how they describe these giants. And so I'll jump in real quick to my experience of it. My experience was one of fear. Like, I was in just mental anguish, sort of like everything was. And dude, this was awesome. We also did this rune during, like, I think it was the Mars Jupiter, or not Mars Jupiter, Mars Pluto. There was like some Pluto shit going on. Like, the astrology was like particularly gnarly as well, and we didn't plan it, but it just happened to be this way. But for me, it was like a lot of like those negative mental voices of like just the bad shit you hear, you know, the negative internal monologue that kind of like brings you down. To me, those are thirsts. Like, these are like spirits that prey on our, you know, where we're weaker, where we may not see ourselves as being, like you said, like the boundaries, like where my boundaries are weak, it might prey on me there. Like, and so it was like, it was just a lot of like, it wasn't anything in particular really that happened, but like, I had some really rough gym days. I had some really rough work days. I had some really rough like relationship days. That was just like, it wasn't anything especially different that was happening, but it was just my reaction to them was one of just taking it hard. It was just hard for me. And like I said, the fear, and it's weird because like, looking back on it, I can say like it was a tough time, but I can't honestly remember specifics of what was so tough about it,
Yeah.
which is to me like an indication of like some, it was more of like what I took from it Because like a slight that maybe was meant as a joke to one person can be a piercing thorn to another. And so I it's fun because this is one of those first ones that's like it's a being from the myth. Like, okay, so you get Fehu and that's like cattle, and then you get Urus and that's like some more. This is like animals and stuff, but this is the first one that's like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, this is not something I'm immediately familiar with. So, anyway, I'll stop talking and let another one of y'all give your experience.
Yeah, I
Another
can
one.
go. So I had kind of a similar thing, but instead of mental, it was physical. So, like, weirdly enough, it really blended with Urus for me. I just had like I got like a bunch of nerve damage type stuff that I've had for years and years, and like it flared up like as soon as we did Thurzaws. Just started having days where like hard gym days, like you were saying, days where like I was just extra sore to the point where like I didn't even want to move or walk for this couple of days. Weirdly enough, I had a day where like I was coming down like the second step on a ladder and my kneecap completely dislocated. Like went to the outside of my knee, and like the doctor was telling me I was probably gonna have to have surgery and wanted to schedule an MRI. And like weirdly enough, as soon as we moved into Ansu's, my knee hasn't bothered me since. So
Wow.
it was this really weird thing of just like blending together with Urus into this whole like body obstacle theme like the entire time for me, which is completely new because previously all of my experience with Thurzaws was like I kind of always saw it as like the obstacle rune. It's like the giant in the room. It's the thing that's in between you and where you're going. So kind of still an obstacle, but almost like from the other direction. And I had used it a lot in runic magic to do things like, protection magic and stuff like that. So it was kind of interesting going from having a lot of hands-on experience with doing protection magic with Thurzaws and then experiencing it in the Runewalk, and it just literally like physically destroyed me.
Yeah, it's both. It's one of those things like I see it as it's interesting because it looks like Issa and Kenaz and a reverse Kenaz, and it's like fire and ice. The coming together, like we discussed in the last episode, like in the gap, those two forces came together and created everything. But those two are also like destructive in their own ways. Sorry if I interrupted you.
Oh, no, you're good.
Word. Lindsay, I'm excited to hear about yours. I know it's similar.
Mine was very interesting. So I didn't really work with Thurisaws before this. I had the not uncommon sort of skittishness around it. It felt very cursey, and I'm a very Jupiterian, positive person. So right from the get-go, I got very clear messages like, this isn't for you. And over the course of the 2 weeks, I had an experience where I basically got all of these messages in something that I had going on in my life that were like super positive, like this great thing's gonna happen for you, this great thing's gonna happen for you, a lot of hunger and thirst, right? And then had the rug like pulled out from under me, total surprise, total disappointment, which felt really it was just really raw and painful on an emotional level. And it was an interesting experience because like I said, I kept getting these messages like, you don't understand this rune and maybe you need to sit with it more. But then digging into the rune poems for Thursas,
Yeah, that's just
they're
wild.
straight up like Thurs the giant causes anguish to women. Misfortune makes few men cheerful. But then also Thurs giant torturer of women and cliff dweller and husband of a giantess. Like multiple messages that particularly Thursas is negative towards women. And then with all these runes, I have had the practice of putting them under my pillow at night, and asking for dreams. And every night, my dog would sidle her way onto the pillow and push me off the pillow. So I was sleeping on the other side of the bed until I finally took the rune out from under my pillow. She was like, "Mom, you're an idiot. I'm going to protect you from this curse that you stuck under your pillow." So the whole time it felt like this is not for you, which was really interesting. And I was really excited when we got to Ansu's.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also some stuff that came through for me like in the journeys that was about like this is something that must be won, like or overcome. Like there's all these stories in the sagas about like betting with a giant for your life, like betting your head in a riddle competition with a giant, or like having a even like there's like freestyle rap battles against giants, like they're called flights, but like it's just a freestyle rap battle, like it's pretty dope, or just like an actual battle with a giant, you know, like a fight. And that something came through to me that it was actually heartening during the times that were tough, and it was like you got to make it through this, and if you make it through this, you win the power of the rune, of the Thurisos rune, because it is actually a very powerful rune to use, like David said, for protection. Also, you know, if you ever have to, you know, do some offensive protection, it's pretty good for that too. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the poem, because I remember we did that last time, and that was something that we wanted to revisit on each episode. I'm gonna look real quick.
Another thing that was interesting about Thurisaz, we talk about sort of its penetrating quality is I went to nick my hand to give a little bit of blood as part of the offering, as I'd done with the previous runes, and I bled so much that I had to stop and go and like get a cloth and stanch the bleeding, and that's when I decided, I have another source for blood for these. I'm going to use that moving forward. But it was wild. Like, again, it just felt like this is the rune wanted me to sit with how dangerous it was, which was very interesting.
I think that's the one rune that I can't be sure, but I'm almost positive that the same sort of thing happened to me with that particular
Yeah,
lady.
I
Yeah.
remember you posting a picture of it. Yeah, it was like it. I mean, it is the stabbiest of the runes.
Very stabby, yeah. Wow. Damn. That's crazy.
It's funny because I was looking over my like I was like, didn't I do more journeys with this? And I was like, this is one that we just like didn't we weren't like super stoked about like even going to.
Yeah,
We only did one.
I did
Yeah.
one journey. It was like, you're confused, and then no more journeys.
Yeah, I
No,
was just like, can we go to
this
this
was the
one?
shortest journey out of all the ones we've done so far for me too. Like I remember like my journey was like being on this mountaintop and like this actual huge Jotun coming up, and I went for a knife and the Valkyrie's like, "That's it," and then it ended. And it was like, okay, that was like 4 minutes long total. And then that
Yeah.
was it. Like it was the shortest one by far.
I find it's interesting because I find that these ones, like usually journeys, I'm just like going the whole 10 minutes, but these ones, for some reason, they're like, okay, we're done. And it'll be like 6, 7 minutes. It's just weird. I don't know what it means, but it's fascinating. Okay, any so I think we're not done talking about Thurisos because I think that the next one will kind of like by contrast, they're very interesting, right? Because it's like a very kind of hard one, and then like a really kind of exciting one. But the way they flow into each other is really interesting. So, are we good on that before we go into Ansu's? Like I said, I think we're going to talk even more about Thurisaw's When we talk about Myst as well, because I got some interesting stuff from her about giants in general. Ansu's.
Ensues. The letter A. And Odin and the forces of that oppose the giants.
Yeah. And that divine frenzy, that inspiration. So who wants to jump in with an Ansu's experience?
Well, for me is so it was kind of the same deal where with Thurizaws it blended in with Urus, and then when we moved on to Ansus, it also still blended with Thurizaws. So it was kind of like Thurizaws was this weird transition one where I didn't get a direct experience. It was always the one to the left and the one to the right. So whereas previously I was getting all this weird body limitations and injuries, this one kind of moved into like mental blocks. Like I kept on finding myself in these like weird mental loops of like talking myself out of like doing projects that I wanted to do, or like, oh, I was going to think about like writing a blog. It's like, no, you shouldn't do that. No one's going to read it. It was like all these weird kind of like obstacle Thurizazi type things, but all mental based. But the weird thing about it though is like as soon as I kind of like finally got over that, it was like just this like such huge amount of relief, and he like went fully into like the Anzu's experience, where it was like now all of a sudden, instead of having all these blocks, I was getting like crazy inspiration and all these ideas, and like filled up like half a notebook of stuff I want to write about. So it was still had that weird blending quality to it.
Yeah, there's a flow for this. I want to read the rune poem real quick because this was an interesting one where, like, I've worked with Ansu's in the past, but then, like, didn't remember any of the poems, did the journey, and then, like, the poem is, like, so weirdly close to the journey. The Norwegian rune poem is: River mouth is the way of most journeys, but a scabbard of swords. And then let's see the next one. The Icelandic is: God-aged Gautr and chieftain of Asgard are the lord and lord of Valhalla, describing Odin. And then the Anglo-Saxon is: the mouth is the source of all language, a pillar of wisdom and a comfort to wise men, a blessing and a joy to every thane. So there's a lot going on here. But the river one was really interesting to me because my journey, and I agree with you, David, like that was a similar kind of experience to me where it was like just the amount, like the relief of being done with the Thurisaw stuff, and like that stuff pretty much ended for me as soon as we moved on to the next one. That was, and like enough to make it like that to me was Ansu's. Like, so one of the things that Mist told me in my automatic writing session with her was, so Thurisaz is the hunger and the thirst of the time of chaos and the time of the giants. Ansu's is being fed, drinking mead in the hall of the Allfather. Like, it is coming into the hall and eating and drinking. And so it's almost like that weird thing where it's like, would this have tasted so good if I wasn't so hungry? I don't know, but they are the same sort of experience. Like, that boundary between the land of the gods and the land of the giants, it somehow fucking connects them to where, like, they define each other. So I thought that was really cool about the way that Thurisaws and Ansu's flowed together. And then my journey was, part of it was, and it was similar to what you described, David, about your journey with the giant. Like, I followed out into like this river. Now you have the river mouth, and this was before I had read the poem. And it was dried up, And I walked to the source of it, and there was a giant there. And I had like kind of a battle of wits with the giant, where the giant was like, "Where does this river flow?" And I asked the giant, "Where does this river flow?" And the giant was like, "It doesn't." And I was like, "No, you're wrong. This river flows in the past and in the future." And in that moment, the giant turned to stone and fell over and shattered against the rocks, and then the river flowed out of the river mouth again. And this idea of like it being a scabbard of swords, but then also being like the words of our mouth, the joy of everything. It's like almost like this wits, the inspiration to like, oh, this is how I solve this conflict. And sometimes, you know, without fighting. Didn't have to fight the giant, just had to outwit it.
Interesting. I think I felt I was more busy, like with work stuff at this time than at any other time since we started. But I also felt more grounded than I had felt. And I think part of that was with the prickliness of Thursa's. Getting through that really painful boundary stuff, and then I started sleeping really well. I felt not accomplishment, that's not the right word, but like something like, well, that task is done. I no longer have this concern looming over me, these tasks that I needed to complete, even though I was still very busy, I was able to maintain stasis, balance between work, rest, and health. And it wasn't nearly as stressful or draining as it had been the previous month. So for me, it felt like a clearing had been made for me, where I could rest, where I could reconnect to the earth, where I could. It's also where I started really noticing the elemental nature of the practice, right? Really, the grounding, fire, air, water, earth, all these things became much more present in everyday life, right? Like, I need to go stand outside and barefooted on the grass. I need a new white candle for my altar. I need the right incense. I need they need something to drink, right? The Norns and the Valkyrie need new sustenance, new liquor to drink. So I don't know, it felt very grounding. There was a clearing made where I could see 10 feet in front of me, whereas the weeks before everything was in my face, right? A clearing had been made. That's what it felt like for me.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because in Freya Aslan talks about how, in the same way that Thursas is a fetter, Ansu's is can be used to unfetter. It is ultimately a rune of freedom in the way that, breathing is sort of a release of tension. It's that unfurling of the things that tie us up.
That's good.
That's interesting. It makes me think of the Havamal. There's one of the magical charms in the Havamal that Odin describes as you say it and your bonds are cast off.
Yeah, it's the fourth rune. It is. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's here I have it. Think of it, right? I know a fourth one. It'll free me quickly if foes should fetter me fast with strong chains, a chant that makes fetters spring from the feet, bonds burst from the hand. So, and I think that's, it's equally functional for psychological fetters as it is for more literal
Yeah.
bindings.
I tried to invoke that when I was in a police car one time in handcuffs, And he was like, no, you're doing this one.
That's brilliant.
Plus, like, what are you gonna do? Fucking escape and like take the gun? Like, come
Yeah.
on.
Oh, man.
Do you want to talk some, since this rune is Odin? Do you want to talk some about Odin?
And I always want to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. But I think it's good, you know, because like we talked, okay, because now we're getting into the cosmology. Now we're getting into the dramatis personae, as it is, right? Like of the runes, like. Okay, we were just introduced to giants who coincidentally came first. But it's interesting because first you have the cow, right? She licks the gods out of the ice. And then we have the giants. And then we have Odin. So it's like we're getting this progression now. And, you know, we have this sort of time of chaos, and then we have the Aesir that kind of come and bring some semblance of order to it. They order kind of the realms and they draw these boundaries and they set the girdle around Midgard. But also, you have this concept of the first war. And it's the war between the giants. Oh, just hit the mic. I'm gonna look it up actually in Völuspá, because this is gonna feed into what I want to talk about for Mist, what she told me, some of that stuff. But yeah, David, do you want to give a little, or do you want to talk about Odin a little bit?
Yeah, we can do that. But so it actually fits in kind of good with my experience for these two runes too, about kind of facing obstacles on both sides, because at least for me personally, with my path with Odin, one of the main things that he does and one of the main interactions I have with him is basically overcoming obstacles. Like, it seems like the main way he does lessons is to put me up against stuff that I don't want to do, and then basically trying to push me harder over and over to, get through these obstacles, get through these things that are holding me back. So it's kind of it's actually very fitting that we end with the rune that belongs to him during this 2 weeks, after having two back-to-back weeks of one physical obstacles and then two mental obstacles,
Yeah.
and then kind of coming to his hall at the end,
Yeah, I love it. That's beautiful. And the piercing, man.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so if Thursaz is the piercing, like getting pierced with the spear, the gadfly that brings about the inspiration, that thought that can't stop, that's kind of gnawing at you, and you can't quite get it, but then you have that moment of inspiration where the solution comes to you. That moment is Odin. That moment of him seeing the runes blaze up below him when and he was sitting there for 9 days, thought he was going to die. That moment, and this is what we're doing. And I actually forgot to give the little Valkyrie spiel at the beginning of this episode, like I was supposed to. But in Grimnismal, when Odin is between the fires in the hall of a king that's burning him. And on the ninth day, calls on the ninth day, he gives this accounting of the worlds and everything that's in them, and all the players that are in them, and all the names of the gods and the spirits. And he ends with all of his names. That's that moment. That's the moment of the meat of poetry coming. And so I want to read from the Völuspá about the giant, what it says about the giant war. Or we can read about the Norns first because there's a Norn chapter, right? Or a Norn stanza right before it. Thence came the maidens, mighty in wisdom, three from the dwelling down neath the tree. Urth is one named, Verdandi the next. On the wood they scored, and Skuld the third. Laws they made there, and life allotted to the sons of men, and set their fates. Now here we have the description of the first war. The war I remember, the first in the world, when the gods with spears had smitten Gulveig, and in the hall of Hor had burned her, three times burned and three times born, oft and again, yet ever she lives. These two things are being described here. I would argue, like personally, like my the gnosis that I'm getting from this are like it's those are both describing the same event, like the kind of the birth of the Norns. But that's me. I mean, the cool thing about this dude is that like we could all come up with a different reading on this stuff, and it would all just be equally as valid because there's not like an orthodoxy. Anyway, so with that, let's kind of bring our discussion to the Valkyrie, Mist. And I think that will continue to bring these concepts together, that will continue to tie in Odin. Because, you know, what we're describing here is with these 13 Valkyries, what we're talking about is the Valkyries that Odin called when he was in the fire on the ninth day. He called these 13 Valkyries to bear him a drink. And I think what the purpose of this whole thing is to get that same drink. So, without further ado, Valkyrie Mist, whose name is the same. There's no, you know, like the other ones, it's like we needed a translation, but Mist is the Mist. She's the Mist of battle. She is the fog of war. What were our experiences with her?
Well, similarly, we started with her with Thurisaz, and so in that first experience, it was sort of simultaneously being in a bunch of brambles, like outside of Sleeping Beauty's castle, and then being in a mist and not being able to see her, but knowing that she was there, and I felt safe but confused and lost. Like she was not, no harm was going to come to me, but she also wasn't going to show me her face and didn't show me her face until about 3 weeks in, which I thought was really interesting, very very cagey and serpentine.
Yeah, serpents. Like the mist slithers on the ground like a serpent through the valleys. It was cool because we were hanging out, and after you had had that experience with that thing falling through that you were like thought was a sure deal during the Thurisaz stuff, and we were walking like a nature path, and there was like on these what are those big things called? Those water.
It's like a cistern
The
sort of thing for
cisterns.
catching rainwater.
Yeah, those big cisterns had like all this wild like art on them, and a lot of it was like winged women, wild, right? And one of them was like had her face covered by these rings, and we like looked at each other and we were like, "Holy shit, that's Mist. That's her." This is wild how that goes.
Sometimes the universe bludgeons you.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned that she sort of hide was a bit cagey, right? I had a dream late in our time with Mist, and it was I was in some sort of marketplace and following her, the blonde woman who I could only ever see, like she would kind of look back and then continue to walk. She knew I was trying to catch up to her, and she knew I was following her. She didn't seem angry or upset that I was following her, just that she didn't make it any easier for me to catch up to her. And that was really the extent of the dream. It was like me following this tall blonde woman through this sort of marketplace. She was aware, and I couldn't catch up with her. And she was sort of weaving through people, as you say, serpentine, in a serpentine kind of way. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I had a lot of I remember during the time with her having lots of dreams that are, I guess pop culture reference, like very similar to like the movie The Mist, where it was like something just outside of your view or something just, occulted by mist or steam or trees that you could like sense its presence, almost like a Jotun or something even, but couldn't really ever get a direct view, couldn't ever get a direct experience of it. It was always kind of just moving out of your line of sight or just slightly covered up so you couldn't really see exactly what was going on, which kind of also explains like the rune experience too, with like the physical stuff I was happening. It was like, you kind of had this apprehension about like working out or pushing your body too far as you just didn't know what was going to happen. And then same thing with like the mental anguish stuff, it's like your train of thought was just very cloudy. Like the fog of war, you had fog of thought. So it was kind of both really that same theme running out through both ways.
The fog of thought. That's interesting because one of the things, and I think it was around the same time, I'm pretty sure, because it was also when I was getting this Gulvig stuff. It was this idea like one of the kennings for clouds is the Valkyrie Road. And clouds are mist. Like it's just when if you like if you're on a mountain, a cloud becomes mist. Like you're just in it, right? Like, especially like if you drive through like the Appalachians like early in the morning and you can see the mist all around you, like there's this very the sense that you're in a cloud, which you are. It's just low. And so the clouds, so again, we go back to the giant war. We have Odin slaying Ymir and crafting Midgard out of his body. You know, his blood becomes the sea. His back becomes the mountains, or like, you know, his the land or his limbs and all that. Well, what his skull cap, like the top of his skull becomes the sky and the stars, and his brains become the clouds. And so I kind of got thinking, like, okay. So the Valkyries ride the brains of a giant. And there's also this idea, like there's something like kind of like coming together to this for me, because you also have Odin grasping the skull of Mimir, who was like his ancestor, but also like a giant, or like his uncle or something, and grasping this skull, painting runes on it and painting it with herbs and whispering to it, and it tells him wisdom. So like you have the skull of a giant giving Odin wisdom. We have the skull of the giant from which the Valkyries ride down to bring us wisdom. Like, is this the same thing that's going on? Like, is it a microcosm, or is the myth telling us something? And this started to kind of unfold in my conception. And it's crazy because, like, while I'm doing this, I'm reading these stories like I never have before. Like, this stuff is all landing and connecting with me in a way that it never did. Like, I'm able to like really grasp some of the like, I don't know, the more occulted meanings of some of these myths. Or maybe it's not. Maybe it's just my own twist on it. But you know what I mean? It seems to be quite profound. So I did. Any other thoughts there before I?
I'd like to say something about that. It's really, I feel a lot of the times when having these conversations, I feel like when Netflix or streaming services first came out and you're given this giant library of stuff to watch, and you sort of get overwhelmed like a kid in a candy store, like, oh, I want some of that, and I want some of that, and I want that, and I want that, and being really new to it, I feel that way about the lore and the myths themselves. And so I've been buying all these books, and I'll like read two pages of one, and then three pages of another, and then I'll come back to the other one. So I feel a bit like a kid in a candy store when it comes to learning the myth and lore of the runes and everything concomitant to it.
Yeah, I that's exciting because it is kind of like just taking a big old gulp of that meat of poetry. Can you do the king of the hill? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, let's see here. Is it? Oh God. Okay, so
I'm
this
putting
is
you on the spot.
Hank Hill reading the Norwegian Ansu's rune poem. Bobby, the river mouth is way of most journeys, but a scabbard of swords.
Thank you. That's wonderful. So,
It's still scary.
I'm gonna send you some, 'cause there's like the Völuspá that I just talked about, the Grimnismál Mall. These parts of the Eddas, they're really short. They're in poem form, and you'll dig them. And they give you pretty much like if you read Völuspá, Grimnismál Mall, Vafthrûðnismál, and that honestly may give you most of the cosmology. And then you got Havamal, which has like some of the other Odin stuff, and then some other there's you find gems. But like those give you pretty much the whole rundown.
Right.
They're short.
Cool.
So going back to that, I did want to read just apart from my automatic writing with Mist. She said, "My sister is an owl, but I am two snakes coiled. I am the poisoner's song and the healer's hands. I am the birth breath and the death rattle, each a sigh that heralds my coming. A clock ticking am I that counts the days of a life's time." And now this made me think of the measuring of the threads that the Norns do. And I said, "Are you related to Norns then?" And she said, "We all are. Three times Gullveig burned, three times Gullveig born. She stands at the epicenter of your time. And we are the shrieks of her burning." I said, "Were you born with time then?" She said, "We ride time as we ride all things, laughing and moaning our ecstasy." So this. Again, like this like blew my head open because this idea of this primordial witch being burned by the gods three times. They burned her once, she came back. They burned her again, she came back. They burned her again, she came back. She was reborn from the flames three times. And she gets a different name after that. But what Mist seemed to tell me, and again, this is like I'm not telling anyone how they have to see this, but this is my personal gnosis, is that this was the beginning of time and this was the birth of the Norns. That each rebirth of Gullveig is a Norn, and so she split into three, and that began our time. And the Valkyries told me that they are the screams of the first witch that was burned. And that just, like I said, it just blew me wide open. And it's continued to unfold for me with like what's going on, but we'll continue kind of going and discuss that as we go, because I think there's more to be revealed there. But this idea, okay, because you've got this story of this witch being burned in the hall of a hostile power, and then you have Odin in the Grimness Mall. He is being burned in the hall of a hostile power, like this hostile king. And so you have this myth echo. It's like this event that happened, and the first one was like perpetrated by Odin, which is so it's wild. It's like, and this from, my estimation is like giving birth to Valkyries, giving birth to time. And then you have Odin reenacting this event. He's ritually reliving this event. He's taking the place of Golveig, and then he calls these Valkyries to him. And I'm like, damn, is this how you get Valkyries? So what I'm trying to say is, again, like, this is what we're doing. We are stepping into the flames and taking our place there as Odin and calling the Valkyries to us. And I think that's what this ritual is. We're going to do it over a year.
Yeah. Something strange is that I haven't written a line of poetry in a really long time. I used to, I have two books of poetry written that are out there, and a couple of poems in magazines. And I just stopped. And since doing this and invoking the mead of poetry every single night, I can feel the words, the ideas sort of percolating in there that want to come out in language. So I'm here, this is connected to something I'm working on outside of I'm doing a play, right? And I'm learning my lines right now. I walk around the block and I read, it's very sparse language. It's Samuel Beckett's play, Endgame. It's like supposed to be like the sequel to Waiting for Godot. And what happens is how I learn my lines is I read each page 100 times out loud and I make a hash mark. And when you read language over and over again, it starts to decompose. You start to break words open. You start to mine these words for meaning and what are their main components, right? And there's this one line that I've been trying to memorize, and it's taking longer than the others. And the line is, "No one that ever lived ever thought so crooked as we." And I'm trying to, and I'm breaking down the word no and one that ever, and really deconstructing when you do something over and over and over again. And the more I do that, the more I can feel poems starting to brew in the back of my mind that have nothing to do with anything. They're just, it's like it's awakened the poet in me. I've gone a long way to say that. I try
Beautiful.
to explain that. It's awake. It's reawakened, rekindled my poetic spirit, and I'm positive that's from doing this work.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, so kind of similar to what you were saying, Tim, about we're calling the Valkyries. Is this where Valkyries come from? This was, I think it was one of the last journeys I did with Mist, is where I had the journey that was also kind of instructional, where she told me to basically kind of almost treat this like a soul retrieval type procedure, to where I'm now having each Valkyrie, I'm asking them to like either retrieve or to put a blessing on part of my Fylgja. Because that in the Norse part of the soul, that they say that it's similar to, it's like your own personal Valkyrie. It's the
Yeah.
part of your soul that is re you know it, it it's represented as like a winged female spirit. It's kind of like a, like it's almost like a Norse HGA, it kind of in a weird way. It's connected to like fate and fortune. But so this whole entire ritual has also kind of slowly been turning in this like a way of like building up and restoring like my own personal Valkyrie.
Yeah, that's so sick. I really like that. I really like the soul stuff. With this framework.
Yeah, I feel like it was once we got to Mist, it's when some of the we started to see some of these new intense like bits of gnosis pop in, and it's only escalated. It's not just hanging out with the runes, but like getting whole new bits of tech and prayers and things, which It's going to be fun to share as it goes along.
Yeah, how this thing develops, because we're like adding stuff to it, you know, as we go, we're like adding new prayers and like stuff that we hear, and this is very exciting.
It really is.
Anything else? Think we're at about the hour mark. See if there's anything in our notes. I just navigated away from them. So, yeah. So, next episode, we will be doing the next Valkyrie, who is Skegyld, handles the axe, or my favorite translation of her name, Axe Time. Rido and Kinaz. And this is going to be some fun ones. We're just finishing up Kinaz now, so the episodes are coming more current with what we're doing. Again, if you want to join us, if you want to get in on this, I'm going to put the Patreon link in the show notes. You can Google Nightbird Radio Patreon. You can visit my Instagram, Nightbird Radio, TikTok. Where else am I? I'm on Facebook. I don't go on there a lot. But check us out. It's well worth it.
Join us.
Yeah, join us. We'd love to have you. And again, you're going to get to participate in something really cool that we're building as we go. And, you know, we'd love to have more people to share this gnosis with and bring more to it, you know? Yeah, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And we will see you next time.